officials from Treasury, Independent Regulatory Board, Chairperson Honorable Karim, you are welcome. And the meeting is officially open. Kulek and Alan, do we have apologies?
Chair, it's Alan from Standing Finance. No apologies, but just Dr. George indicated that he needs to leave the meeting at 12:30. From the select side, Chair, there are no apologies.
Okay. Before we proceed with the meeting, we have received the queries that is Honorable Karim and myself from members of Select and Standing Committee in regard to the legality of a joint meeting. We have since sought legal advice, and this is what we got from the Parliamentary Legal Division. I will read it for you so that I don't take anything out of context. NA Rule 161 provides for meetings of NA committees. Sub-Rule 1 provides that and as determined in accordance with these rules and decisions, directives, and guidelines of the program committee in accordance with Rule 210. Rule 210 deals with decision-making in the NA programming committee. NA Rule 167 deals with general powers of committees. It provides that the NA rule allow an NA committee to schedule a meeting with an NCOP committee. When a written instrument is referred simultaneously to more than one NA committee, NA Rule 169 comes into play. NA Rule 169 deals with conferring powers of committees and allows joint reporting, and this is not applicable when one or more NA and NCOP committees meet jointly on Section 75 legislation, unless the joint rules permit joint reporting on Section 75 bill as contemplated in Section 45 subsection 1b of the Constitution. We are just mentioning this as these rules for joint reporting are not in place, but joint meetings are contemplated in the Constitution. Our understanding is that the NA and NCOP committees have regularly conferred or consulted on various matters, including Section 75 bills. Briefings and public hearings have been conducted in this manner, regardless of the fact that the bill is still with the one house and not officially before the other house for reasons of efficacy and effectiveness. It also has beneficial consequences for persons making the submissions on a bill. This is an established practice and is permitted in terms of the standing rules of Parliament. It is also our understanding that under COVID-19 situation, committees regularly compare to use Parliament's bandwidth effectively. It is our view that there is nothing unconstitutional nor irregular otherwise in an NA and NCOP committees consulting or conferring. The standing rules permit this and the Constitution contemplates the same. In terms of the structures in Parliament, the matter whether the rules are sufficiently clear may be discussed in the NA rules committee. In respect of scheduling meetings, the Chief Whip Forum that will feed into the NA Programming Committee for formalization may be approached. So what we are saying is that the arrangement that we have comes from a Chiefs Forum and the Programming Committee of both houses. So if we think that this arrangement is not workable, what we'll have to do is to take the matter back to the Programming Committee and Chief Whip Forum for them to sort it out. The arrangement that we have between the select and the standing committee is not the arrangement of Honorable Karim and myself. It's what we were given by our political principles that we have to do things this way. So if there are issues, let them take the same route that they came with, and then we take it to the right forum, and we'll get directed. I hope that the matter is clear, Honorable Member. Unless Honorable Karim will also want to make an addition. Honorable Karim.
Hello, Governor Chair. Nothing much to say. Just to say that from 1988, I can recall at local government level, we worked with Muhammad Baba's committee. Then Imkalipi succeeded him. We did the same. In public enterprises, we didn't have legislation, and so we hardly ever met together. But with Hoshi Makwena, who chaired Justice Committee, as I did on our side, we had to work together. Now, what's interesting also, Chairperson, is that on the eve of the 2000 local government election, we had 76 bills as well, because local government affects all three provinces. And actually, we were desperate to complete the legislation. So we sat for like about, if I'm correct, 6 months or so in joint committees. The issue arose there, but all parties, including the DA, agreed. So look, it's very simple. If the rules can be adjusted to prevent this, or changed, or set very clear conditions under which the two committees can meet, then we have to abide by the rules. Secondly, if the COVID-19 circumstances have now eased, and people feel that the reason, as I understand it, I did in fact, following the DA raising it with me twice now, maybe three times, speak to Jomo Niambi and Faisal Mohai. The argument they gave me, as I recall it, and maybe you should get it in writing, because I also raised the issue about our independence, as I have indeed to you, Chairperson, at times you recall. The reason they gave me, and I explained this to the DA, and it's exactly what Mr. Frank Jenkins explained, was firstly because of COVID and our limited bandwidth, as you said, and as I think the legal services, but also because they didn't want briefings over and over again on the issue. As I explained to the DA on the NCOP side, it's only briefings and hearings that we do together. Then we branch off on our own, as has happened with the disaster management relief bills. Secondly, what we explained to the DA, and they actually before COVID, as they'll recall, late last year, there was agreement that we would do it even before COVID, Chairperson, is that the advantage of the NCOP committee actually getting a briefing on the original bill, Chairperson, which we don't get if we only get a briefing on the NCOP side, is we see what the original bill was, what is the bill the NA adopted, the differences between it. Secondly, by listening to the public hearings there, we don't not have hearings on our side. We do, as the DA knows. The advantage is we can say to you, Chairperson, even on the 75 bill, we've heard the public hearings on the NA side. We've seen the bill you've changed. And we don't agree. We actually agree with some of the stakeholders, and we think you are to 75, well, this is our view. Finally, you can reject what we say. So we have discussed this repeatedly. And we've been sitting together up till the last week before we broke for the constituency period. And I did urge members not to participate. They can observe in that last meeting. And in the last week when you dealt with your report, that's what I think the lawyers are saying, we are not a joint report like on the fiscal framework, Chairperson, or on the approved petition. So the Money Bills Act explicitly says that both committees, as you know, Chairperson, have to adopt the same fiscal framework report and have to adopt the same appropriations report, I think. Oh, no, it's slightly different with them. But with finance, that's how we've done it. That's in the Money Bills Act. So it's neither, I don't have a strong view either way. If the Rules Committee changes the rules and the House Chair on the NCOP side, the Chairperson, and the Speaker say, no, we don't need to sit, yeah, I'm cool. So I don't have a vested interest in this thing. That's all I'm saying.
Unmute, Chair.
Mike is muted. Oh, sorry. can we proceed with that understanding that the matter will have to be taken up with the programming committee and the speaker and the chairperson of the National Assembly? So if they have to review this arrangement, they will...
Chairperson.
Yeah,
I'm from the Chief Whip's forum now, which started at 10 o'clock, and we raised this concern. We wrote to the Speaker yesterday about the coup d'etat which is being happening on the Standing Committee on Finance because of vested interest. And today in the Chief Whip's forum, you can ask your Chief Whip, you can ask Chief Whips of all political parties, you can ask the Secretary of the National Assembly. They say that these, under no circumstances can the Standing Committee on Finance process any bill with the participation of NCOP. That is what they said explicitly, and the Secretary of the National Assembly said that they will bring this to the attention of the committee. Then I left the meeting saying that we're going to raise this issue at the beginning of this meeting. That is the whole issue. The so-called legal advice that you have read is wrong. It's completely wrong. It's the most unlawful thing that they've got to hear this year. There's no such a thing. There is a process in terms of how bills are processed. They are introduced in the National Assembly either by the executive or by the committee or by private members. Then they are processed, passed in the National Assembly, and then they can then be taken to the NCOP for deliberation. So this there is, of course, joint committees if it's not about legislation that we can have to then deal with briefings by the minister and all of those other things. But not on legislation like we're dealing with now and like we dealt with yesterday. So it is misleading, and it's a deliberate misleading to want to impose people who have got vested interest in this particular process to participate when they are not elected members of the National Assembly and even threaten to evict us from meeting. How do we have elected members of the Standing Committee on Finance being threatened to be evicted by unelected people who are not supposed to be in the committee in the first place? It is unacceptable and must never be accepted here. It's wrong.
Honorable Shwam, we get your point. I'll set the matter up with the chairperson of committees and, as you said, the Chief Whip and the Secretary of the National Assembly. But for now, all of them have been approached me. And I think I'll take it upon myself to... But for today, can we proceed with this arrangement?
Chairperson, if I may come in?
Yes, right.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, thank you. I hope I just misunderstood Mr. Shivambu. I'm not going to respond as a result. So I think I misunderstood what he was saying. I'll have to review on the video. But yeah. Chair, I think that following yesterday's discussions in the committee meeting, where Mr. Karim suggested that we seek legal advice. We are seeking that advice. We haven't had a response yet. We're not as lucky as you have been. Perhaps that's because we might be getting the right advice. But, Jay, so I'm going to make 2 points. Number one, if you can send me that advice that you've received, please. If you can send a copy of it to me, then I can obviously give that to our advisors, and we can analyze it in terms of what they're thinking as well. That would be appreciated, first of all. Second of all, I think for us to involve ourselves today, based on the stance we took yesterday, would not really be fair and appropriate. And as such, once again, I'm going to make my comments, and then I'm going to excuse myself and so that I'm not going to participate further in this meeting until we've received clarity on this so that we can go ahead constructively and legally. But I appreciate the fact that the matter has been aired, obviously, at the various fora. Thank you.
Thank you. I've forwarded the advice to Hill Lewis because it's the one that I have his email address. So
thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Can I comment?
Honorable Dandu?
Yes, Chair. Yeah, Chairperson, I think to proceed today's meeting, I would join you, Chair, to say that for today's meeting, let's proceed today's meeting while you are busy clarifying the matter so that we don't interrupt this meeting of today. So I would suggest and support that we continue today's meeting. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, can I be noted? Honorable Ockham.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to be short. I am standing with Honorable Ryder in this matter. I think it's a matter of principle that we believe that there are certain processes that must be followed. We are awaiting our legal advice, and I'm also asking you then to excuse me from this meeting. Pending the legal advice, we will also notify you of what the outcome of that is. Thank you.
I have sent the legal advice to Bill Lewis. Can you request him to forward it to you? It comes from the Parliamentary Legal Services.
We won't do that. We are waiting our own legal advice as well, and after we've received that, we will revert back to you. Thank you so much. Please excuse me from this meeting.
Okay. Let's proceed with that understanding. Those who will excuse themselves, they are allowed to do so. But those who are comfortable to proceed with the meeting, let's proceed. As I said, we'll consult the Secretary of Parliament and the Chairperson of Chairperson, our Whippery. And we hope that this matter will be dealt with up to by then.
Chair.
Yes, Honourable
Chair. I think it's inappropriate to proceed with the meeting in that format. You can take a break even for 30 minutes to consult with the Chief Whip of the Majority Party, with the Secretary of the National Assembly, who were explicit today that we must not confuse this process. There's no such thing where legislation in terms of introduction in the committee is co-chaired. It doesn't happen. It has never happened in terms of this particular process. So don't fall into a trap because you are just engaging in an unlawful thing, and it's unacceptable. Take a break and then come back. If you advise like from the political leadership, which we engage with in the Chiefs Forum, says what you're doing is correct, you can proceed. But it's inappropriate. It's wrong. You're just subjecting this to unnecessary legal challenges. Yesterday when we started, I said that we are presenting to the Standing Committee on Finance. And there were just people who were just attending, like there are media people who attend here and other observers, like staff and everything else. That is how we can understand it. But this must be a Standing Committee on Finance that must deal with its own issues, not so-called joint committee of people who are smuggling themselves because they were not elected into the National Assembly and want to smuggle themselves and raise problematic views and perspectives in terms of what must happen.
I think in terms of whether somebody was elected or not, those who are in the NA are not in the super house. We are equal members of the parliament, coming from two houses, NA and NCOP. And as I have said, that this is not the arrangement of the two of us as chairperson. It's what we were directed to under this COVID-19 or lockdown circumstances. And I will plead with members that for today, we proceed. We are not going to take any decision. It's just to get a briefing from National Treasury and ERBA, and we'll take it upon ourselves to make sure that this matter is laid to rest, that for next week and moving forward, coming from the committee and the Secretary of Parliament.
No, but Chair, on order, Chairperson. It's a wrong reading of the rules again, and of Parliament and NCOP. We're not on an equal footing. We do not have the same rights. There's no member of the NCOP when a president is being elected who can say I'm available to be a president or the Speaker of the National Assembly. There's no member of the NCOP that can just go and introduce legislation in the National Assembly. It has never happened. It's not permitted. Why should we be busy going zigzag with people who were appointed in terms of this process? Like we have to be fair in terms of what the rules say. We do not easily just walk out of meetings ourselves. Like we raise issues strongly to say that the problem here is an opportunist who lost being chairperson of the Standing Committee on Finance and wants to reimpose himself here. And we must state it like that. And that is unacceptable because it is going to undermine the legitimacy of the processes that Parliament is engaged in. It's unacceptable.
Honourable Sprom.
Chairperson, I must object. This is offensive to, right?
First, outcome?
None is elected. None of us stood for election. We're elected on party lists. We are appointed by our parties, firstly. Secondly, I have explained to you, from 1988 onwards, we've been doing this. Never once.
There was no democratic parliament in 1988. There was no democratic parliament in 1988.
98, when I first came to government, we're not the only committee. All the legislation, including the disaster relief legislation, was dealt with like this. We didn't ask for this. That means every piece of legislation passed by every joint sitting on a 75 bill is actually illegal. So we got to go back to 1994 or 1996 when the Senate became the head. To say I have a vested interest is ridiculous. I agree with the content of the bill. The National Assembly is actually dealing with a bill where the ANC and the EFF agree. It's actually a resolution, Chairperson, as you know. None of us in the ANC can undo a NASDAQ resolution. The only issue I raised, can't you deal with the policy issue and tweak it a bit so that it's more constitutionally safe? What's the point of passing a bill that we agree on, both sides, ANC, NASDAQ, EFF, and then somebody takes it to court and we lose out? That'll hold the process. That is all I say. Can't you tweak it a bit? I even said, if you tweak it a bit, as long as the policy issue is there, there's no disagreement on the policy issue. But you know what? I can't have, Chairperson, with due respect to your chairing, this guy keep insulting me as if I chose to come here at my age and I need to be here. But the fact is I'm here and I have to do my job. I have explained to you, we've done this thing, Chairperson, repeatedly. You yourself know, Comrade Chair. Everybody knows. We just did it with the last bill. So I think the matter should be settled. No one evicted anybody. No one has a right. I don't have a right to evict your member any more than you have a right to evict our members from the NCOP. No one, that's utter nonsense. No one asked him to leave any meeting.
But you did that yesterday. You were saying that I must be evicted from anything yesterday. Why are you lying now?
You lie. It's a Trumpian approach.
So you don't hear yourself when you talk.
This is Trump, not Karl Marx.
You don't hear yourself when you talk.
Honorable members, let us respect the chair.
Okay, comrades and honorable members, we heard what you have raised in terms of the legality of the joint meeting. And as I've said, that this is not the arrangement between the two chairpersons. It's what has been presented to us under the lockdown circumstances. And there were reasons, there was a rationale behind this. And as I've said, can we agree that for today, we get the briefing, and then we will also move further to also get the advice or the position of Parliament, both NCOP and NA, as to whether we should proceed with this arrangement. If the agreement is that we should not proceed with it for the future meeting, we'll do so from next week. But we have been meeting and processing under in the form of this arrangement. Can I plead with you that for today we proceed to get a briefing from the Treasury and ERBA on the bid, while making sure that we consult extensively on this matter and a decision will be brought back and be presented to this forum. Can we proceed in that spirit?
I agree, Chair. Thank you very much. It's Abraham.
Thanks, Honorable
Abraham. I don't agree. I don't agree at all. It's the wrong thing.
Njadu agree?
Okay. Honorable Shwambu, you don't agree. Honorable Njandu?
Agree.
Okay. Can we proceed with the understanding that there are issues that have been raised by the EFF and the GA in this respect, and the matter will be taken up properly, and nothing will be done behind the scenes in processing this matter, and the matter will be dealt with, and a final resolution has to be taken in this regard. Can we proceed to item 3, National Treasury before ERBA? Can you make opening remarks in regard to this bill? Because bills are not presented by entities, they are presented by a department. Who's there from National Treasury?
Good afternoon, Chairs. Can everybody hear me? Thanks. Thank you very much to you, Chairs, and the Honourable Members for allowing us today to present. My name is Cora Maria. I'm the Acting Accountant General that takes care of ERBA in my role, and I'm also Minister's representative on the ERBA board. So thank you for allowing us. My legal division, if I can just introduce them, and they'll give you a briefing of where the bill started already and also a proper background. We are represented by Advocate MP van Square and Advocate Elway Malaoutsi, and they'll be taking you through the presentation today, and then I think I'll also allow for ERBA to introduce themselves once we get to that point. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks. So we'll be doing the presentation.
Advocate MP and Elway, yes.
Good morning, Chairpersons, Honourable Chairpersons, and members of the committee. I'm asking my colleague to share the presentation maybe on the screen. We're just going to give, in terms of the content of the presentation, we'll be dealing with the background to the bill, the overview of amendments, and then also just to highlight briefly now, the amendments in the bill pertains to the following broad areas: the strengthening of governance, disciplinary enforcement committees, their constitution, and then also the requirements for the registration of auditors, reporting of irregularities, and then also there's quite a lot in the bill about enhancing, investigating disciplinary processes. Then as well, linked to that, the sanctions following guilty findings. We also deal with certain criminal offences and the protection of information, including personal information, and then certain transitional measures pertaining to the handling of disciplinary processes that commence before the amendments and should it become law. Then lastly, after our presentation, we'll ask Erba to do a presentation of the current and proposed disciplinary processes to give an understanding of that, because as I indicated, that's a key area of amendment in the bill. Now, in terms of the background, the bill broadly deals with challenges and limitations that IRBA faces in discharging its regulatory and oversight responsibilities, especially in light of the current state of the auditing and accounting professions. Now, in terms of the background, some of the members may recall that there was a financial matters amendment bill before Parliament in 2019. Which dealt with amendments with a number of pieces of legislation, including the auditing profession bill. But during the process of processing of that bill, the Standing Committee of Finance at the time were not able to proceed with the amendments to this Act in view of the very limited time that was available before the fifth term of Parliament ended. Because at the time, if I recall, I think the bill was tabled earlier of that year, which left limited time. And this was the amendment to the Sticker Act was much more comprehensive than the other pieces of legislation dealt with in the Financial Matters Amendment Bill. Just to indicate that the amendments proposed in this bill are exactly the same as those that were contained in the Financial Matters Amendment Bill. And it was subjected to a public comment process. Now, I just want to indicate, because it may be raised, that there was already public hearings that the committee conducted, and certain stakeholders raised in the public submissions concerns regarding the proposed search and seizure provisions in the amendments. At the time, Treasury started to engage with these stakeholders, but we didn't complete this process because the amendments were not proceeded by the committee. Now, obviously, if these same concerns are raised during the hearings and in submissions before the Standing Committee of Finance, we will continue that process subject to the direction of the committee. Just briefly to explain, we had meetings with the stakeholders at audit firms where we made a proposal, we had a discussion, we made proposals, and they submitted comment on those proposals. And it's that process that we haven't concluded. I'll ask my colleague now to continue with the detail, which we said the devil is in the detail of the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, MP. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to honourable members. As MP indicated, I am now going to start presenting on the overview of the amendments, and that's on that slide 5. And it's investigating and disciplinary processes, and the bill also makes provision for the power to enter and search premises and also to subpoena persons with information that may be required for investigation or disciplinary processes. And furthermore, there's also provision for a power to issue warrant for purpose of entering and searching of premises. And there's also amendments which relate to processes that would be followed or embarked on following an investigation of improper conduct by an auditor. And there's also provision for which relates to the duty to disclose information. And also the proposed amendments that relate to the sanctions that would be imposed following the different disciplinary processes, which are the admission of guilt process, and also in instances where a disciplinary hearing has been conducted. And then there's also provision that deals with criminal offences that would relate to investigation and disciplinary processes. And lastly, there's also proposed amendments with regard to the protection of personal information. With regard to the strengthening of governance in the board, it is stated that in order to ensure that IRBA performs its functions within a defined policy framework, there is a proposed amendment that requires IRBA to determine a policy framework, which would be done with the approval of the minister. And furthermore, in order to strengthen IRBA's independence and address conflict of interest of board members, there is a proposal to exclude registered auditors and candidate auditors from being appointed as board members. And there's also a proposal to prohibit board members from sharing directly or indirectly in profits of registered auditors or candidate auditors, and also to prohibit board members from receiving any payments from registered auditors or candidate auditors. To avoid a situation that the board does not correct when a term of a board member ends, the proposed amendment is that a member may continue for a further period of up to 3 months if so requested by the minister. And this is done in order to allow the filling of vacancies without affecting the board's proper functioning. That would be found in clause 4 of the bill. So currently, board committees are required to meet 4 times a year. And in order to enable flexibility, the bill proposes that these meetings are held at least 2 times a year as a minimum. And then it is also critical that IRBA has a dedicated and independent board committee in order to deal with investigations of conduct by registered auditors and candidate auditors. And therefore, there's a proposal that the board committee should actually comprise of persons of high integrity, and therefore it is necessary that provision regulating their conduct is contained in the bill. So you would find in clause 6 that there is a provision that indicates or that does regulate the conduct of persons that would be serving in this board committee. The next two slides would deal with issues relating to disciplinary and enforcement committees. And currently, the disciplinary committee is overburdened by a number of disciplinary cases of auditors. And in order to alleviate the burden of the committee, there is a proposal to enable IRBA to appoint as many members of the disciplinary committee as it considers appropriate, and also constituting a panel from these members to deal with disciplinary cases. And as MP already indicated, at the end of this presentation, IRBA is going to provide a presentation just to explain in a more explicit way what are the differences between what currently obtains and what is being proposed in terms of the bill, insofar as issues of discipline are concerned. So members of the disciplinary committee should be persons of high integrity, and their conduct should also be regulated. Therefore, there's a proposed amendment in the bill which is aimed at prohibiting members of the committee from using his or her position in order to improperly benefit him or herself or someone else, or even to impede the work of the committee. And to further alleviate burden on disciplinary committee, there is a proposal to establish that the bill proposes the establishment of an enforcement committee, which will have the powers to deal with certain categories of disciplinary matters of improper conduct. And as I indicated, when IRBA makes their presentation, they're going to make it very clear in terms of what are the roles that the different committees would play insofar as disciplinary matters are concerned. With regard to registration requirements for auditors, there is a proposed amendment that membership of an accredited professional body will be a prerequisite for anyone to be registered as an auditor or a candidate auditor. And as with many other professions, the auditing profession requires very high ethical standards. The current provision on registration that is the current prohibition in terms of the of the act before the amendment, is that an auditor or candidate auditor convicted of offence relating to dishonesty, so that is only linked to a penalty without the option of a fine. Whereas the proposal in terms of the bill is that the prohibition would be if a member or an auditor is convicted of an offence, he or she will be prohibited from registration regardless of the penalty. And that can be found in clause 8 of the bill. The Act currently does make provision for the reporting of irregularities by an auditor. And there is a proposal to amend that provision. And since auditors have a responsibility, as I indicated in terms of the current Act, to report irregularities to IRBA, the risk of removing relevant auditor always exists. And therefore, the bill proposes the prohibition on the removal of registered auditor before an auditor completes the process of reporting the irregularities to IRBA. And the Enforcement Committee, as provided for in the proposed amendment, may refer non-audit matter brought against auditor, an auditor to the relevant professional matter for to the relevant professional body for investigation and disciplinary processes. With regards to, as MP also indicated, that the majority of these proposed amendments actually relate to issues of improper conduct and discipline. So in order for an investigation into alleged improper conduct by auditors to be thorough and effective, it is very important that certain powers are given to the investigating committee, and obviously within the confines of the Constitution. And the power to subpoena documents is also very important and necessary mechanism in order to obtain the required evidence. And this, therefore, this is a proposed amendment to empower the investigating committee to have the power to subpoena an auditor who is charged with improper conduct or any other person to submit to the investigating committee any documents that would relate to the charge that an auditor may be facing. And for purposes of conducting thorough investigation into an alleged improper conduct by an auditor, in some instances, it may be necessary that the investigator gains access to the premises. And for this, as we all know, generally a warrant would be required. So therefore, the bill makes a provision for entry into an auditor's premises with consent, and where consent is not granted or provided, the bill makes a provision for a warrant to be issued by a judge or magistrate in order for the investigator to enter and search premises during an investigation of an alleged improper conduct by an auditor. The bill also contains procedures regarding the search and seizure to be conducted with strict regard to the constitutional rights as well as decency and good order. Once an investigation into an alleged improper conduct has been completed, there are different processes that are proposed in order to expedite the disciplinary process. So the bill proposes that if an investigation indicates sufficient grounds that the auditor be charged for improper conduct, one of two things may happen. So we may either follow what is referred to in the bill as an admission of guilt process by the Enforcement Committee, or that matter may be referred to the Disciplinary Committee for a formal hearing. And where a matter is referred to the Disciplinary Committee, a panel will be appointed for each case instead of a Disciplinary Committee having to deal with all cases in terms of discipline. And in order to ensure that the panel of a disciplinary hearing is sufficiently empowered in discharging its functions, provision is proposed for the panel to have the power to subpoena a person to appear before it. And then where an admission of guilt process is followed, the bill proposes sanctions which may be imposed by the Enforcement Committee, and these are: they may caution or reprimand the auditor, the Enforcement Committee may impose a fine which would be based on the maximum amount that would have been determined by the Minister of Finance, or the Enforcement Committee may actually impose a sanction that the auditor undergoes specific training. So the Auditing Profession Act currently empowers the disciplinary committee to impose fines not exceeding an amount calculated according to the ratio for 5 years imprisonment, which is prescribed in terms of the Adjustments of Fines Act of 1991 on a registered auditor who is found guilty of disciplinary hearing. Fines which have been determined in terms of this act, that is the Adjustments of Fines Act, have been found to be too low, and in most instances they do not actually make the required impact as a deterrent. So sanctions to be imposed following the disciplinary hearing in terms of the proposed amendment would include the same sanctions that the Enforcement Committee may impose, but in addition, the disciplinary committee may impose a sanction which would result in the cancellation of the registration or the disqualification from registration on a temporary or permanent basis for the auditor concerned. And as part of demonstrating that improper conduct by an auditor is not to be tolerated, the bill proposes amendments which make it an offence to fail to comply with a subpoena or to interfere with or hinder the conduct of an investigation. So a person found guilty of this offence may be liable on conviction either to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or to both such a fine and imprisonment, and that is provided for in clause 15 of the bill. And as in order to safeguard information obtained during the performance of functions in terms of the Auditing Professions Act, the bill proposes the prohibition on the disclosure of information, such information, except where such disclosure is required by other legislation. And there's also provision made in the bill for IRBA to protect personal information that is under its control. And that is also to accord with the spirit and principles that you find in the Protection of Personal Information Act. So lastly, the bill makes provision for transitional measures where an auditor was charged with improper conduct which would have been committed before amendments proposing the bill take effect, and also where an auditor would have committed improper conduct before the amendments take effect but the auditor had not been charged. And that would be found in clause 17. And that, in a nutshell, concludes the presentation on the amendments to the Auditing Profession Act. And Chairperson and honorable members, I wish to thank you very much. And I'm now going to hand over to IRBA to give us a presentation on the current process and the proposed process with regard to discipline. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Elway. Good afternoon, Chairman, honorable members and meeting participants. I am Janita John, the CEO of the IRBA. It is indeed an honor to be here today to discuss the IRBA's most important legal instrument that empowers and enables us to deliver on our mandate. It is my pleasure to introduce you today to the esteemed group of women representing the IRBA today. Our board chairman, Ms. Marti Janssen van Rensburg, who is with us today. Mrs. Gillian Bailey, head of investigations at the IRBA. Mrs. Rebecca Motsepe, who is our head of legal and registry. Ms. Jill Levendal, our board secretary. Lebo Manganyani and Lorraine van Skalkvik from our media relations team. We really appreciate this opportunity, and I now hand over to Gillian Bailey, who will highlight briefly the anticipated impact of the amendments to the main components of the IRBA's investigations and disciplinary process. Over to you, Gillian. Thank you.
Good afternoon, chairpersons and honourable members. I'd like to take you through what our current investigation process is. We have an investigation committee that comprises 10 non-executives who are independent of the board and consist of people that were previously registered auditors, chartered accountants, attorneys, and business professionals. We also have a second committee level within the investigations process, and that is a subcommittee of the IRBA board made up of 3 members of the board. So we receive a complaint of improper conduct, and our first step is to check whether the respondent is in fact a registered auditor at the time of the transgression, and also whether the complaint meets the definition of improper conduct. If these criteria are not met, we are unable to proceed with the complaint. Should they be met, we will then have our staff analyze and collate information on the matter before it is then tabled at our investigating committee for deliberation. The investigating committee makes a recommendation on the outcome to the disciplinary advisory committee. The matter is tabled at the disciplinary advisory committee for deliberation and a final decision on the outcome of the matter. There are 3 possible outcomes that can be reached with regards to a particular matter investigated. Either the matter is not proceeded with, in other words, the matter is dismissed because there is no evidence that the auditor is guilty of improper conduct. The next type of decision that could be made is what we currently refer to as a consent order, and that is where a registered auditor is fined for not adhering to either the professional standards or the code of conduct. The third type of outcome that could occur is a matter is referred to a disciplinary hearing. And when that does transpire, the matter then gets transferred to our legal department. We, as the staff of the investigations department, implement the decisions of the committee. Going forward, the amendments that are being proposed would make the following changes. The investigations committee would comprise as many non-executives independent of the board as is deemed necessary, but needs to include at least 2 individuals who were previously registered auditors and have at least 10 years experience in auditing, and 1 attorney who has at least 10 years experience in practicing law. The name of the Disciplinary Advisory Committee has been recommended to be changed to the Enforcement Committee to avoid confusion with the disciplinary process. So the Enforcement Committee is still that subcommittee of the board, and at a minimum, it needs to include at least 1 previous registered auditor with at least 10 years experience and 1 attorney with 10 years experience in practicing law. The change that comes about when we receive the complaint is we now have, through the amendments, the option to onward refer non-audit matters. So we will assess the type of complaint, and if there is a complaint that is not audit related, we are able to refer that complaint to the relevant accredited professional body who will then look into that complaint. And through our oversight and our monitoring process of the accredited professional body, we will be able to determine that the accredited professional body has sufficient processes in place to actually ensure that that complaint is appropriately dealt with. The next steps continue to be the same. We would ensure that the respondent was a registered auditor at the time of the transgression and the definition meets a the criteria of improper conduct. The investigation staff would analyze and collate the information on the matter and table the matter at the investigation committee for deliberation and recommendation on outcome to the enforcement committee. The matter would be tabled at the enforcement committee and again, deliberation and decision on final outcome of the matter. We've just had through these amendments the terminology utilized for the consent order process, the fine process, and that is that it would be called the admission of guilt process. And a very, very big change in the admission of guilt process with regards to the fine is that currently the fine is pegged at 200,000 Rand per charge, but the proposal going forward is that the Minister of Finance would set the maximum level of the fine. the rest is the same as currently. Now we go to the disciplinary process. At present, we have a disciplinary committee which consists of 11 non-executives independent of the board, and it comprises advocates, attorneys, registered auditors, and chartered accountants. When a disciplinary hearing is called, six of those 11 non-executives sit to hear the matter. So the matter is referred from the disciplinary advisory committee for a hearing. The registered auditor is informed that the hearing is proceeding. A date of the hearing is set down. The charge sheet is formally served on the registered auditor. And then the registered auditor is given an opportunity to plead to the charges as set out in the charge sheet. If they plead guilty, it will immediately proceed to a sanctions hearing. If they plead not guilty, we need to have a hearing on the merits of the matter. So if it's not guilty, we go to the extreme right of the slide, where the documents would be exchanged and prepared for hearing. We would have a disciplinary hearing to hear the merits of the matter on the relevant date set down. And then 30 days from the conclusion of the actual hearing, the disciplinary panel would give an outcome on the merits of the matter to advise whether they have found the registered auditor guilty or not guilty. Should they have found the registered auditor guilty, then they would set down a sanction hearing date. The sanction hearing would proceed on that date, and what is important to point out in our current legislation is there is no stipulated time frame from the date of the decision of the outcome on the hearing to the prescribed date for the sanction hearing to proceed. So we do sometimes have quite a time lag before a sanction hearing does proceed. The sanction hearing would then proceed on an appointed date, and then the Act currently says within 30 days of the sanction hearing, the disciplinary hearing panel would issue the final outcome with regards to the sanction to be imposed on the auditor. Sorry, having a technical glitch. The proposed changes through the Audit Professions Amendment Act is that is the slide projecting or not?
It's not projecting, Gillian. Maybe I can try and get it up there on screen.
Sorry, I'm not sure what happened. Support slide.
It's just our last slide, eh?
Yes, it is.
Sorry.
Okay, I'll try again. Okay. Okay, the disciplinary committee going forward would work on a pool and panel concept. So there is no defined limit as to the number of people that could be in the disciplinary pool. The criteria that is set out is that it would be non-executives independent of the board, and one third of them would need to be previously registered auditors who have at least 10 years experience in auditing. One third would need to be attorneys with at least 10 years experience in practicing law, and one third would be other suitably qualified persons. For example, experts in IFRS or qualified users of financial statements. Then the panel concept is that you only would require three of the disciplinary committee members to hear a matter, so we would be able to run more than one hearing at a time, and this would speed up the process. The panel would need to comprise at least one former registered auditor with at least 10 years' experience in auditing and one attorney with at least 10 years' experience in practicing law, plus any other member from the disciplinary committee. So the matter is referred from the enforcement committee to the disciplinary committee for a hearing, and the registered auditor is informed by letter that the complaint is proceeding to a hearing. The date of the hearing is set down. The charge sheet is formally served on the registered auditor. The auditor can plead guilty to the charges or not guilty. If they plead not guilty, we'd have to have the merits hearing, and that would proceed on the appointed date. Subsequent to that, the disciplinary hearing panel has 30 days to give the outcome of guilty or not guilty. If it is guilty, now we have a time frame being set through these proposed amendments that the sanction hearing and needs to take place within 30 days of the outcome of guilty or not guilty. Then the sanction hearing would proceed on the appointed date, and the time frame for the final decision on the actual sanction to be imposed has been severely reduced from 30 days to 5 days for the disciplinary panel to give the decision on what the actual sanction will be that will be issued. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We hand back to you.
Okay. Thanks for the presentation, Treasury and ERBA. Honorable members, does the presentation on the amendment of the bill. Questions for clarity and comments. Alan and Kulego will assist in identifying members who want to speak.
On the meeting chat, Chairperson, there is no one at this stage.
Okay. So if that's the case, we'll have to proceed. Thanks, Erba and Treasury. We'll take the process forward, publishing the bill for public comments, come back to the committee. We'll invite you when we receive public comments, and then take the matter forward in that manner. What is in the screen, Nkula? I see you have sent me something.
Oh, yes, sir.
You mean as Kosana joined the meeting, Louis left? Okay.
No, Chair. There's a message. Could Irba please share their slides as well?
Oh, they should send the document to you so that you can distribute them to us.
Yes,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. It has been distributed to National Treasury, so it will be circulated.
Yeah, if you can do so now, so that the Secretariat can forward them to...
It is with National Treasury. Thank you.
To members. Well, welcome, Kanye Pratt. Where's Ved? I see here he wants to speak. Sister Tebu.
I think it was a mistake, Chair, because Mr. Okamp left the meeting.
I got the message.
Yes, he put something on the chat that he wants to say something, so maybe he removed. I misread.
Chair, yes. Alan, sorry, that was earlier when he had to raise a question about the process.
Before he walked out of the meeting. Okay. Thanks very much, Erba and Treasury. As I've outlined before, that will take the process forward, publish the bill for public comments, come back, process the bill, we'll invite you, then write the report to the National Assembly. Before closure, are there announcements? Alan and Kula?
Not on my side, Chairperson. There are no announcements.
Nothing on my side either, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Karim, is there any issue that you want to put across before we officially close? Honorable Karim? Is he still connected?
Yes, sir, he's still connected, I think. I don't know what's happening. I'll try him on his cell phone.
I wanted to check if there's something that we want to raise before I officially close the meeting.
Chairperson, are you referring to me?
Yes, that before we close the meeting, I wanted to check if you want to make some comments.
No, just basically, Chairperson, I wasn't clear from MP whether, you know, the issues that came up in the public hearings last time, where that the seize and seizure clause may be illegal or unconstitutional. Now, have they sufficiently addressed that issue? Because as a committee, the caller might recall, we were not convinced with that argument. Again, we just wanted to set carefully. So we said to them, look, the same issue came up, Chairperson, when we dealt with the FIC amendment bill. People asked whether the power to seize and search was legal, and there were court cases around it. So it was dealt with there. Now, MP, I don't know whether it's of any relevance to this particular bill. So that's the first thing. Was that issue adequately addressed? I couldn't tell. Secondly, Chairperson, this bill, as I think we all know, especially those of us who were around in the last term, is very, very important because, as you well know, and so indeed to members of the committee, the two committees, it's really actually the errant behavior of auditors in the last few years, here and globally, all over the world. The regulatory bodies, if I understand it correctly, and Erba will be able to tell, are getting more and more powers, regulatory powers, to take sanctions against those who are errant. If you look at the corruption that's happening worldwide in the private sector also, it's actually because auditors turn a blind eye. There are endless accusations, take the VBS case as well, Chairperson, of auditors turning a blind eye and getting paid to do so quietly by those who are doing the wrong thing. So this is a very important bill, and we regret we couldn't finish it the last time. Interestingly, Chairperson, the reason why it couldn't be finished last time, the irony is that the NCOP Chairperson and the senior officials there said that, you know, we were coming to them too late as the NA, and they wanted more time on the bill. So finally, we conceded that it was a financial matters amendment bill. There were many other urgent issues as well. Erba was deeply disappointed. So were we. And basically, you know, it's very good that the bill is here. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Karim. Can Erba or Treasury respond to the issues raised by Honorable Karim on the seizure? Erba, Treasury, are you there? Kula and Alan, what happened to our colleagues?
Abalegi.
Bagu. Yes, Olan.
Asabali Bali.
Treasure in Erba, where are you?
Oh,
we can't hear you. Unmute.
Chairman, can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can hear you.
Jillian?
Did you hear what Honorable Karim has raised?
Yes, Treasury will deal with this response, Chairman.
Okay. It's not Treasury. You... the question is raised by Honorable Karim.
MP, you're breaking up.
Chair, Raoul.
Yeah, I think MP is struggling with
connection. We are going to the house not so long. Can you quickly respond to the issues raised by Honorable Karim? Mrao, do you seem to be the connection?
Okay, thanks Chairperson. MP, I will deal with it. So with regard to the legality or constitutionality of the... Oh, MP is back.
Mraud, proceed. We can hear you clearly.
Can you hear me, sir? Okay, thank you very much. So with regard to the issue that Honorable Karim raised, with regard to the constitutionality and legality of the search and seizure provision as proposed in the bill, as we indicated at the time when the amendments were introduced together with in the Financial Matters Amendment Bill, our view remains that the provision is legal and constitutional. However, as proposed and directed by the committee at the time, that Treasury and the relevant stakeholders that raised the issue should further engage and see if we can find a common ground on how the provision should be formulated. We wish to indicate to the committee that process will still be undertaken from Treasury's side together with the relevant stakeholders in order to see if we can find a formulation that meets both the parties' expectations. But as a principle, our view is that the provision for search and seizure as a principle in the bill is quite legal and constitutional. We would just work on how the provision should be formulated. And as I indicated, the engagement with the relevant stakeholders would still take place, and a newly formulated provision in that regard will be presented to the committee at the appropriate time. Thank you very much, President.
Okay, thanks. Honorable Karim, do you have a follow-up, or you are okay with the response?
Thanks, Chair.
Do it, I think. And frankly, the committee members, we're not lawyers. We just thought it was fine, similar to what we... But beyond that, I just drew the attention of your members to the importance of this bill and the urgency to process it. That's all. Thanks very much for giving me time, Chairperson.
Okay. Thanks very much, Honorable Karim. We are on the last item of closure. Thanks very much, Honorable Members of the Standing and Select Committee, parliamentary officials, Treasury, Erba, and our guests. The meeting is officially closed. Thanks.